Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We have a really fascinating one today.
Yeah, we're getting into something that honestly feels incredibly universal, even though it's so specific.
Right, exactly. So our mission today is to decode this, well, this really powerful, almost physical density you feel when you enter a home that's been occupied by the same family for decades. Like, why do those spaces feel so heavy with history?
Oh, totally. You walk in, you can just, you can feel the weight of it in the air.
Yeah. And to do that, we are looking at the conceptual notes and just briefly some of the technical specs for a watercolor painting. It's called Teciéndonos, which means weaving us.
By the artist Jairo Duque, right? It's piece number 6 in his Prater Trastio Pintura Artistica series.
Exactly. And just to touch on the specs real quick, so we have the context. The original reference photo for this piece was actually taken by the artist in Cali at the family house of 1027.
Right, in Colombia.
Yeah. But then the watercolor itself was made in Whittier, California.
Which is such a massive geographical contrast right off the bat.
It is. And
Yeah.
it gets crazier because, okay, it's an intimate, private moment of a grandmother at a sewing machine, right? But when it was exhibited at the Art Box Infinity Gallery in Berlin back in May 2023, people were like having intense emotional reactions to it. Strangers were crying.
Right, and it's scheduled for the Casa del Arte in Palma de Mallorca in Spain in December 2024. So it's traveling all over.
Yeah. So my core question for you is, how does a painting of a grandmother in a living room, with roots in Cali and Whittier, how does that make a viewer in Germany feel like they are literally looking at their own family?
Well, I mean, that's the genius of it. Duque has essentially codified a universal emotion through this hyperlocal
A
scene.
universal emotion.
Yeah. Because think about our reality today. We live in this intensely globalized world, right? Families are just, they're geographically scattered everywhere.
Oh, for sure. You've got like a sibling in London, a cousin in Mexico, maybe kids studying in Japan.
Exactly. But at the same time, we still have this fundamental, almost biological human need to belong to a cohesive group.
Right.
So that need constantly clashes with the physical distance between us. And when someone in Berlin stands in front of Teciéndonos, they aren't looking at Duke's family anymore. They're projecting this archetype of their own family onto her.
Because that tension of being spread out is just, it's the modern condition.
It really is. And the artist takes that modern crisis of dispersion and addresses it through the physical action in the painting.
The sewing.
Right. She isn't just, passively looking out a window. She's not flipping through an old photo album, indulging in this passive nostalgia. She is actively sewing.
And the notes point out that this act of sewing is a metaphor, right? Like it's a daily, grueling struggle to keep the family together.
Yes, it's an active fight against entropy. Time naturally wants to pull things apart.
Yeah. And the vocabulary Duke uses in his notes is just, it's so striking. He doesn't call her a matriarch or, a homemaker. He calls her an effective ambassador.
Or domestic chancellor, which I just
A
love.
domestic chancellor. I mean, that is a serious title.
It is. It's a subversive elevation of what we usually dismiss as just a domestic task. He's using the language of statecraft, right?
Right. Putting her on the same level as like international diplomacy.
Exactly. She
Yeah.
is negotiating treaties. She's maintaining alliances. She's making sure the borders of the family don't just dissolve into nothing.
When I read that part about the diplomacy, my brain immediately went to like tech infrastructure.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, it's like she is the central Wi-Fi router of this giant family network.
Okay, I see that.
You have all these nodes, the relatives, and all those different time zones, and modern life is just pulling at them. Jobs, stress, life, they're constantly at risk of just disconnecting.
Dropping the signal.
Yeah. And the domestic chancellor is the server that just refuses to let that signal drop.
That's a fun analogy, but I'd actually push back on the router idea a little bit.
Oh, why?
Well, a router is passive, it just sits plugged into a wall doing its thing automatically. What this chancellor is doing is exhausting physical labor.
Oh, okay. Fair point.
It's more like she's out there manually splicing the fiber optic cables back together every time a storm snaps them.
Wow, yeah. That is way more active.
And modern sociology actually has a term for this. It's called kinship maintenance work.
Kinship maintenance work. I mean, that literally sounds like an industrial job.
Right. And it functions like one, but it's
Yeah.
almost entirely invisible. It's this monumental effort to stop the family from just well, dissolving into isolated individuals.
It's remembering the birthdays, organizing the holidays, tracking the emotional state of the cousin in London so you can tell the uncle in Mexico.
Exactly. Families don't naturally stay together without someone constantly doing that invisible labor.
But, and here is where it gets really interesting to me. If she is the one manual cable splicer, that's a single point of failure.
Yes. It's an immense burden for one person.
Right. And if you trace this metaphor of weaving back through history, like we see in the sources, kinship maintenance wasn't always just one solitary modern woman in a living room.
No, not at all. Historically, it was a totally decentralized network.
Like the whole village was involved.
Exactly. If you look at pre-Columbian societies with their massive community looms, or even ancient Greece, think of Penelope weaving and unweaving. The creation of textiles was the central hub of a community.
Right. It was communal. As the physical threads were woven, the social structures were being woven at the same time.
Yes. Communal weaving wasn't just about making clothes. The rhythm of the loom was where vital social work happened. Conflict resolution, passing down oral history.
So they were processing the trauma and weaving the alliances of the entire tribe all together.
Exactly. The burden of keeping everything cohesive was distributed.
Which is such a brutal contrast with today. I mean, now that massive communal loom has essentially collapsed onto the shoulders of just one solitary woman.
Sitting all alone in a California living room. When you reframe it against history, the sheer scale of the responsibility she's carrying is just staggering.
It really is. And to understand the weight pressing down on her, we really have to look at the physical space she's in, the actual infrastructure housing this family router.
Yeah,
the spatial composition of Te Yandonos does a ton of heavy lifting to convey that psychological burden.
So for you listening, if you haven't seen the painting, the notes describe this deeply saturated, heavy foreground.
Very heavy.
Yeah, the floor is dominated by these warm, baked red clay tiles, and the walls are just intensely packed with stuff, old family photos, festive masks.
And that really prominent rooster on the table?
Yes, the totemic rooster right next to her. It is such a densely populated space.
It's very grounded in the present.
Right, but then directly behind her, it opens up into this long hallway stretching to the back. And the lighting completely changes.
It floods with this bright, ethereal light.
Yeah, you can see hanging bicycles and some potted plants, but they're all blurring and fading into the white light.
And Duke is doing something brilliant here. He's using the mechanics of a camera lens to basically map out human neurology.
Wait, how does depth of field map onto neurology?
So think about how a camera aperture works, right? The subject in the foreground is sharp, heavy, present. That sharp foreground, the clay tiles, the rooster, the grandmother, that represents the absolute present.
The tangible reality of the work she's doing right now.
Exactly. The here and now. But the objects in the background hallway fall outside that focal plane. They lose their sharp edges.
They blur out.
Right. And that visual distortion perfectly mimics how the hippocampus processes distant human memories. Over time, the exact sharp details of our past naturally degrade. They literally blur into a bright, indistinct haze.
Wow, that's really deep. But I have to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Looking at all this stuff, you know, the rooster, the masks, the bikes, isn't this visual inventory a bit cluttered? Like, doesn't the domestic chancellor get lost competing with all this noise?
It's funny you bring that up, because Jairo Duque actually addresses this critique directly in his own notes.
Oh, really? He critiques his own painting?
Yeah, he engages in this really honest autocritique. He wrestles with the risk of visually drowning the main figure.
Huh.
He talks about the need for greater visual economy.
Visual economy. I guess it's kind of like a film editor, right? When there's a huge battle scene, sometimes they'll mute all the background explosions just so you can hear the main character breathing.
That's a perfect analogy. You strip away the noise to isolate the emotional core. He was actively grappling with that dilemma, documenting the rich chaos of a lived-in home versus stripping it back so her emotional weight hits you harder.
But honestly, even with the clutter, the feeling of weight is inescapable. And speaking of weight, I want to briefly touch on the physical composition of the artwork, because the medium itself is telling the story too.
Oh, absolutely. The technical specs aren't just details, they're metaphors.
Right. So the notes mention it's a large watercolor, 22 by 30 inches, painted on 640 gram, cold-pressed, rough arches paper.
And if you've never felt 640 gram paper, it's incredibly thick. It's rugged.
Almost like heavy cardboard.
Yeah. And being rough, cold-pressed means it has this microscopic landscape of deep craters and peaks.
Right, and the physics of watercolor on that paper is so cool. Like, with oil paint, it just sits on top of the canvas. But heavy watercolor pigment is carried by water.
It floods the paper.
Exactly. And then gravity takes over. As the water evaporates, the heavy pigment physically drops and gets permanently trapped in those microscopic craters of the paper.
It's literally trapped in the physical architecture.
Which perfectly mirrors the theme. This rough paper trapping heavy pigment is exactly how the walls of that house trapped decades of family memories.
The infrastructure absorbs the history. And what's great is that watercolor is inherently transparent. So even heavily layered, the white of the paper breathes through the pigment.
So the room doesn't feel totally suffocating despite all the stuff.
Exactly. It lets the space breathe.
I love that. And, you know, looking at the actual figure of the grandmother, for someone holding this grand title of domestic chancellor, her posture is incredibly unheroic.
Yeah. She isn't striking a powerful pose.
No. She's hunched over, head down, just totally absorbed by the tiny needle of the sewing machine.
And that posture introduces this concept Dookie calls slow temporality.
Slow temporality. How does that compare to, like, normal time?
Well, think about the world right outside that house. It's a frantic, high-frequency loop.
Oh, yeah. Overnight shipping, instant texts, constant dopamine hits from notifications.
Right. But inside this room, the laws of physics seem to shift. It's an oasis. Time isn't measured by the second. It's measured by the millimeter by millimeter advance of that sewing needle.
Wow. So a WhatsApp notification is instant, but kinship maintenance. You can't hack it. You can't rush it.
You really can't. It demands immense patience. Someone has to sit still and do the methodical work of stitching things together while the world spins out of control outside. Her hunched posture isn't defeat. It's dedication to that slow temporality.
So if we pull all this together, what does it all mean for the viewer? Because if I just glanced at this, a quiet house, unused bikes, fading into an empty hallway, I'd probably assume it was something tragic.
Like empty nest syndrome.
Exactly. I'd think her family left, she's alone in a museum of memories.
And that's the superficial reading. But synthesizing Duke's notes reveals that the Hiendonos is actually the complete opposite. It is a defiant declaration of permanence.
Defiant permanence. I like that.
The sewing isn't just fixing a shirt. She is actively repairing the fabric of the family, stitch by deliberate stitch. She's rejecting the entropy that says distance should tear them apart.
And for you listening, this is where it hits home. Because behind every good morning text in your family WhatsApp group, behind every saved recipe or every chaotic multi-time zone holiday Zoom call, there's a domestic chancellor doing this invisible work for you.
They are operating that solitary loom, fighting to keep your network intact.
So next time you get one of those check-in texts, maybe take a second to recognize the actual infrastructure it took to send it. That's our deep dive for today. Thanks for joining us.
But, you know, before we go, there is one final question lingering in Duke's notes. We see the history trapped in the walls. We see the monumental effort of this chancellor. But what happens to this intricate global network and all their shared histories on the day that the hands holding the needle are no longer there to make the next stitch?